It's small enough that everybody knows each other in a way. In a good and bad way.
Yeah.
It's like you gotta kind of frame on who everybody is. But everybody knows everybody's dirty laundry, whether it's true or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a big game of telephone. Everybody talks shit about each other. Everybody's got something to say, like, you know.
Well, that's how families are too, right? Like, everybody knows each other's dirt, but at the end of the day, it's you against everybody else. And like, the hip hop community here, you know, we don't have the presence of like the indie rock community or the Celtic community or whatever it is. So
fucking
at the end of the day, it's us against, you know, the whole system. So yeah, all the differences kind of fall away.
Fucking Celtic music and shit. Now there's really anything wrong with that. I used to work at the Ale House. I was a bouncer at the Ale House.
Ah, so you had your fill.
Right? So like just the same fucking covers of the same shitty songs, man.
Yeah.
Till 4 a.m. Like,
well, and that's, you know, we've had historical beef with the Celtic community because Ashley McIsaac won the first hip hop award at the ECMAs.
Really?
Yeah, they did him like they did the, you know, Metallica and the Heavy Metal Award going to Jethro Tull. They did the same thing here. First time there was a hip-hop category. Hip Club Groove was in it, and they were like touring nationally off of their incredible Trailer Park Hip-Hop album. But Ashley McIsaac had like techno beats underneath his stuff. So they were like, this is basically hip-hop. You win. Take it. Take all the prizes. And people were just like, wait, what? Like, what? So we've always been a little suspicious of the Celtic community.
You hear that? We're coming for you, Celtic motherfuckers. I'm just joking. I probably shouldn't say shit like that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's also something that is kind of unique to here. So I'd like to see what happens if we actually mix the two, like, consciously. Not just have it taken away, but like actually blend the two. I want to know, can you like, I want to see somebody like live scratch bagpipe.
I lost, when my computer crashed, I lost it, but so you can't tell if this is true or not, but it is true. I made a trap version of Farewell to Nova Scotia.
Yeah, a word.
Yeah, with bagpipes. And it went hard. It went hard in the paint.
Yeah. I've done that too. I've made tracks with like pipes and drums and like the. Yeah. And then like, yeah. Because it's just big, crazy.
It was like, yeah. You know, Farewell to Nova Scotia. You see you bound coast. Like real like sea shanties, but
sea shanty, trap banger.
Beats under that. And it actually. I'm going to send you the sample I used. Maybe we can recreate it because it was.
Oh, that'd be great.
It was actually heat.
I dig for a lot of that stuff too, because like, you know, one of my favorite break beats to use is the Anne Murray, you know, put your hand in the hand break. And it's not the best version of that, but it's like, it's Anne Murray, yo. I'm gonna use that if I can, just because she's like Scotian. So yeah, I go digging through like old weird Nova Scotian records looking for break beats and stuff. And
I had a couple Gordon Lightfoots at home.
Oh yeah,
they'll send them your way.
Oh, there's all kinds of, like, Dick Nolan songs of the Annapolis Valley, and, you know, but there's, like, an ill-ass breakbeat on one of those tracks. Like, but nobody else is going to use that stuff. They're not going to find that down in New York. So it's like, look what we've got. Dick Norton or whatever the guy's name
Dick
is.
Dick Nolan?
Dick Nolan. Norton? I think that's what it is.
I don't know. That's what you said the first time.
I think it's Dick Nolan. Mm. I don't know. I got that record on my turntable at home because it's great.
Digging in the crates is really another lost art of hip hop.
Well, yeah, because GEE keeps going out and stealing all the good stuff.
Fucking Gary.
Gary's always posting. He's like, look what I found. It's like, how did you? I was just there. How did you get that? But
I feel like he just has like plugs at like Value Village.
And oh, somebody calls him up. Just like, yeah. We got the stuff you're never going to believe it. Get here. You got 5 minutes before it hits the shelf. Like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, sampling's kind of fallen out of fashion too. Like once the trap sound kind of took over, which is fine. Like everything evolves, everything changes, so it is what it is. But it's less sample based, so it changes how you're going to do it, and it makes for less personality in the beats, I think.
Because there's a big risk in sampling now too.
Well, that's just it. It's a financial concern. Yeah, that like if it's a real blatant jack, then yeah, you're gonna have a hard time getting that out there. So it's just changed, and it is what it is. But yeah, there used to be like more, I think, personality in beats because you were sampling, because it was more, you know, a little bit more Wild West. You could get away with a lot more.
Yeah.
And then it was like, it's just a different thing.
Also, like, you had to pick your samples, right? So, like, that's where the personality was in. Like, what does the creator like aesthetically? Like, what does, like, because, you know, you can take the same track and find a million different samples in it. Like,
yeah.
How many songs are, like, the same song has been sampled 8 million ways in hip hop? Like,
well, and we used to do, like, track battles and things where it's like you have five producers, the same sample and a drum break, and see how they're all going to flip it differently. And everybody flips it differently because, you know, you just do. But yeah, we don't do that anymore because now it's just like you want the 808s on point, you want like the hi-hats a certain way. Samples and stuff is kind of a secondary feature to that. Like, you want it to sound a certain way, and to get it that way, it's not as much about like, I found this weird Nana Mouskouri sample at Value Village. And so, it just doesn't work the same, which is fine. I'm not a big fan of the whole, like, new rap is terrible. It's not like old rap, so it sucks. Like, it's just different and it grows.
But, like there's also opens things up, too, because you can use samples for trap beats. And that can work really well, too.
Well, that's just it. It's like, okay, so you've got this template. So now how do you kind of flip that and do different things with it? So, yeah, I think it's, I don't fear for the future of it because it's like, it's going to be interesting, whatever it is. But, yeah, there's a lot of doom and gloom. Like, oh, it's dead now. It's different. Like, no, you're just old.
Yeah, you're really quite open-minded, like, musically. Probably more than anybody I know. You really enjoy everything.
I try to, yeah.
Or like, not necessarily enjoy, but you'll at least give shit a shot. And try and understand where it's coming from. You know what I mean? And I really respect that because that's more where I try to be at now. Whereas when, it's funny because when I was younger, I was like a young old head. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was a young old head and I did not like fucking anything. Because when I was starting to grow up, it was like the Soulja Boy era and whatever. And I was like, I'm not listening to this bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? So I was always like a purist, you know?
Yeah.
Until I like, you know, I got older and I was like, okay, that's aesthetically pleasing. Not Soulja Boy.
Yeah.
But
there was a lot to talk about with Soulja Boy, though. Like, whatever it was, like, you can talk about the production, you can talk about, you know, what he's doing differently lyrically, you can talk about how he's promoting himself and, like, new avenues for marketing.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Yeah, like, there's...
Like, putting his name on, like, different, like, as 50 Cent or, like, Snoop Dogg or something, like, on LimeWire.
Yeah.
That shit's nuts.
Like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. That's like, really smart, actually. So
he says his name, like, 100 times.
Yeah.
But so it's like, ding.
The funny thing is, too, like, if you put on Crank That today, at just like somebody's wedding reception, at somebody's aunt's wedding reception, motherfuckers will be super manned.
Yes, like, oh, easy.
Today, y'all can laugh. They'll be doing this.
Oh, yeah.
You.
Oh, absolutely.
Man, I mean, that's just. Drums.
Yeah. But no, it's brilliant stuff. So, like, there's always something to be taken from that because that's one of the things I teach in my class is about this band called the Bo Brummels, and they really wanted to. People who liked the Beatles to like them. And so partly they picked their name because it was B-E-A-U, Bo Brummels. They would be directly behind the Beatles in the record store.
Oh, yeah.
So like, and similar to the, you know, renaming stuff on LimeWire, it's like, how do you trick the game so that you can get your stuff in there? Like, that's brilliant. Whether you like the music or not, like there's something interesting about that. Mm. And I mean, it was super popular too. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, really genuinely whack stuff doesn't blow up.
No.
There's got to be something good about it. Yeah. Like, that's maybe you don't recognize it, but there's something about that that's clicking with somebody.
Absolutely. Like, marketing is really important because people have to be able to hear it. But once they hear it, they have to enjoy it on some level. Otherwise...
And go back to it again and again. you need that repetition because there's so much stuff out there now that's like you listen to it once, like, yep, cool, move on.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you do to keep them coming back?
The way we consume music these days is just sheer insanity. Like, I can't keep up with that shit. Like, I listen to the same like 8 songs all day. Mr. Big Stuff. If You Want Me to Stay, Sly and the Family Stone. Throw in a little Sean Price, like just like you know, Say a Little Prayer for You. I like the oldies.
Stuff.
But yeah, well, it's just too much, man. I get overwhelmed trying to find music.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy shit, man.
That's one of the byproducts of my job is I get to look for new music so that I can talk about it and like bring it into the classroom. And I love that. And I've got a 16-year-old, so he, you know, tells me this is the stuff you really should be listening to. If you want people to think you're cool, listen to this. And if you're, you know, this is what you're into, lame old man, but like try this and then you'll be all right.
That's funny. It's like that's what like my younger sister is like for me, right? Like she keeps me hip to the hip hop, you know what I mean?
You got to have like a younger plug who's going to hook
old,
you up.
When I'm an old, like talking old man shit, she's like, "Oh, this is like DaBaby." Or like whatever, you know what I mean? I'm like,
"Yeah.
Okay, cool."
But you have to listen to them too, because again, you can be like, "Oh, well, you know, I lived through the golden age of rap, so I know more than you do, and I'm going to judge what you listen to based on those standards." It's like, that was 30 years ago. Like, sit down. You know, it's entirely possible that people in the meantime have come up with new and interesting ways of doing things. So, yeah.
Also, like, say what the fuck you want to say. Like, the late 70s, early 80s rappers were pretty much about as technical as mumble rappers are today. granted, they were just creating the shit, so they didn't have the foundation to build more upon lyrically, but it wasn't.
The fucking your average freestyle rapper now is infinitely more complex than like a lot of those early rap superstars.
Well, they didn't have anybody's shoulders to stand on.
Yeah, I mean, it all builds and it's cumulative, but so you can't really judge. But at the same time, like, yeah, the new stuff is just, it's a whole other, you know, evolutionary step beyond.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, you can front on that all you want, but like, that just shows your unwillingness to grow.
Yeah, and honestly, if you're not willing to grow, or if you're not willing to adapt, if you're not willing to play the gay club, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's true. Like, man, like, you can't be just doing the same shit.
Yeah.
Expecting different results.
There's a lot of people who try, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, buddy. Oh, yeah. I'm a rapper in Nova Scotia, man. You think I don't know that? I've been trying the same thing for 10 years, and I just finally switched my plan up.
Yeah, like time capsule of like the 2000s, like big.
Yeah.
Those old pictures.
But eventually, like, you move beyond and you realize, like, yeah, that was this whole period of time, and you can kind of look at it objectively and learn from it and grow from it and realize it was probably better than you thought it was at the time.
It's like looking at like yearbook photos.
Those are good.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, Jay-Z never thought that wearing extra tall tees was going to look funny at some point. And jean shorts that are pretty much pants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you know, I was thinking about it the other day, how cool baggy shit was. How everything had to be baggy. Even the gangsters,
like the pockets,
gangsters.
Though, like having that much shit in your pockets is useful.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's good.
But nowadays, like, even the gangsters, everything's tight. Everything's fitted.
Yeah.
No it's, pocket room.
That's right. So, like, you know, I was wearing my big old Coogee sweater the other day. I thought I looked cool as shit. I'm like walking around. I'm like, man, nobody wears baggy shit. No one.
Yeah. Like, bunch of young people laughing at you. Just like, look at this whole.
Get something that fits, you old bastard.
Like, I'm a rapper, damn it.
I'm a rapper.
You know, like, I'm cool. No. Sit down. Take your baggy shit and go home.
You don't know what I've been through. I played empty shows.
Yeah.
But you must really enjoy teaching.
I do. I never thought I would, but I do. It's a performance, right? Like, it's like doing a show. You've got your set, you know what it is you're gonna say. And you got a bit more room to say it in a way that is effective. Because I try to put that shit into my raps. And I don't know that people were necessarily picking up on all the messages, you know, all the righteous rah-rah shit that I was throwing down. The classroom, though, it's a different kind of thing, you know. You can kind of spread it out and talk about it. And especially in my classes where I get to talk about music stuff. Like, that's... I'd be doing that anyway if I wasn't in a classroom. I'd be standing on a street corner yelling at people about, like... you know? So... Yeah, that's great. I like it.
I was in one of your classes.
Yeah, you were?
Yeah, I was. I didn't do great.
No?
I'm sorry. Theoretically, I should have.
Well, that's
it wasn't about knowledge, it's just a piece of shit. It's not your fault. It was a great class.
Oh, it was
rap
fun.
Rap Revolution?
Yeah. Rap, Resistance, and Religion.
Yeah, rap.
I wish I knew your classes than that.
But, you know, it's funny. My sister was also a student of yours.
Yeah?
Yeah, and she was telling me, like, one day we were just, like, smoking dope in our parents' garage. Shut up, Mom and Dad. and she's like, oh, man, like, my prof, blah, blah, he's so cool. His name is Mr. McGuire. And she's like, blah, 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 explaining about, like, you know, I don't know, the class about...
Yeah.
All the cool rap shit she was learning. And I was like, oh, Mr. McGuire? I was like, you mean Hermit? Like, I know him. Like, personally, we're friends. It was like the first cool rap shit I got to say. I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're homies. I was like, we're in a music video together, actually. Which is actually facts. The Library Steps.
Yeah.
Shout out Ambition, Jesse Dangerously.
That's right. I don't know that I ever saw that.
I never saw the video after it came out. No.
I remember the making of it very fondly, but I don't remember ever seeing it.
I remember just pretending to rap in a circle of Library Steps.
Yeah. Oh, that was the time.
Yeah, Jill shot it. I don't remember.
Yeah, Jill Anderson, right.
Yeah, I don't know where the video ever went.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look it up.
I'll have to look it up.
Or if you're out there and you know where this video is, right to the get down.
I don't think you can write to the get down.
Write it on an envelope. It'll get there.
The producer's like, shut the fuck up.
It'll get there.
You can contact us. Do not tell the audience that. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm trying my best up here, man.
So, being within an educational realm in hip hop, like, how do you find, like, bridging the gap between, like, the academic world and the hip hop world? And what are challenges, kind of, that you have to face doing that?
It's hard to do here more so. Like, as I said, there's places like Toronto and Montreal where it's a bit more institutional. They've been doing it for a minute, so it's not as crazy an idea. Like, Harvard has a hip hop archive now. And, like, they're taking it seriously. But here, it's like, I want to study hip-hop. And they're just like, why? You know, like, that's not a real field.
Halifax is old backwards.
Well, a little bit like that. So everything that I've done is taken a lot of convincing and a lot of, like, let me explain to you how this works. And deal with a lot of preconceived notions. Like, the first time I ever had to do an ethics review, they were like, if you witness a murder or a drug deal... Here's how to handle that. And I'm like, I was planning to go talk to, like, KRS-One. Like, what do you think? What's going to happen here? But a lot of that, like, preconceived notions and stuff. So that's a lot of what I think I've been doing is kind of opening those doors, and hopefully they stay open because it's taken a lot of convincing. I'm starting to work with some folks up in Toronto and Montreal and, like, building national networks for hip-hop education.
Yeah.
So that's helping a lot, but you know, we don't really exist on a lot of people's radars. It's like my archive project is called East of East. Cause when most people talk about Eastern Canada, they mean Montreal. Like if a tour is going to hit Eastern Canada, like that means it's playing Montreal. Then they turn
that's
around.
That's actually true.
So like we're beyond all of that. So yeah, it's really about just kind of legitimizing the whole thing and trying to get people to like, understand that yes, there's value in this and people are interested in it and it's gonna go somewhere. So yeah, let's be about it and support it and see what we can do.
Yeah. I think it was pretty fortuitous that you got in at the Mount as well too. Cause I think of all the institutions here, they would be the only ones really open Or like yeah. not open, at least in the early. Like Dow's fucking kind of snooty, you know. I don't know if I can say that on camera.
Well, I did my master's at Dow. Like they've got good stuff, but I mean, music programs are still not sure how to deal with hip hop stuff because hip hop isn't rooted in like Western music theory. Mm. So you can't teach hip hop the same way you would teach like an instrument.
Yeah, you couldn't teach somebody to rap.
You can, but not through those ways that they've built up over all the years of like, here's how it's done. And they, you know, it took schools a long time to get on to like jazz and studying jazz. And then it was like the, you know, Bob Dylan in the English class. Like, let's talk about rock music. So eventually they'll come around to hip hop, but hip hop's different. Like the production aesthetic is different. How you structure songs is different. They just don't really know, I think, how to fit it into the existing framework. Mm. So until they figure that out or somebody kicks in the door and says, here's how you do it, then it's a lot of just like, we don't know. We'll stay out of it because we just don't know. They don't want to make a mess of it. And
I feel like the visual aspect is different, like the cultural aspect is different, like a lot more storytelling kind of involved.
Well, on the visual side too, because like if you're talking about graffiti stuff, like as an educator, how do you teach that? Like, are you telling people to go out and like bomb on walls? Like, go down to the train yard and like do your thing? The line between, you know, advocating for the culture and then advocating for something that may be questionably legal is a tough one. So, but do you then like say, oh, just work on canvases? That kind of takes away from it too. So, yeah, it's just, I think, not knowing how to do it. So,
throw up a fat piece on your school. Right on the front window.
Each one teach one.
Well, like schools are starting to do that. You're starting to see like big murals. Graffiti murals and stuff like that. Like, that's great. But like, you know, bring in some hip hop educators to talk about why and how and where that comes from and all that. So it's not just, you know, a one shot out of nowhere. It looks cool and then we move on. Like,
yeah, that's a really important thing. You know, like you were talking about earlier, is like consistency, or like it's, you can't just one off. Like, you know, it's like changing your dietary habits for a day and then going back to eating the same bullshit you always ate, right? Like, you're not actually making a difference in your life. It's about the consistency of, like, you know, making sure that other people get a chance to, like, I guess in terms of the murals and stuff, like, you know, after 10 years, that mural will get covered and somebody else will get to paint a new, fresh mural.
Yeah.
Or something.
But, I mean, but that's also, like, a tough thing to sell to, like, an elementary school or a junior high. It's like, look, every year you should allow students to, like, decorate the walls in their own way or put up their own messaging or, you know, whatever's important to them. It's a great idea. I think a lot of administrators are just like, it seems like a lot of work, a lot of, you know, why can't we leave it up for, you know, 4 or 5 years? Because...
Well, that's what I mean. Like, not every year, but every couple years.
Oh, I'm all about, let's do it every year. I mean, first week project. Let's make the space our own. Let's make it speak to who we are and what we're all about. So.
You know, and that is important too, because you know you got to take pride in your, you know, where you work and where you like operate. You know, where you learn.
Yeah.
Right. It has to feel like a kind of a home environment.
And like the kids will want to come to school too, because they'll feel like they're part of it, you know? Like, as opposed to like, you know, like just it really being sterile. It's like, why would you want to go there?
Yeah.
I always hated the way schools looked. Like the aesthetics of like the real bright lights and the drab walls.
The beige paint and and if there was a mural, it was like old white prime ministers and like, you know, some just, you know, propaganda, you know, Canadian stuff and... But if you let kids go in and be like, what matters to you? This section is your section. Like, you can put what you want on there so that you feel like you're represented and you come into place.
Absolutely.
It's a good idea. I mean, how effectively you can pull that off is a different story. But, and again, there's worry that like, oh, are we just, you know, teaching these kids to be criminals and stuff? It's like, well, not if you talk to them and give them information about it. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, there's a difference between like KRS-One and like NWA, you know, like.
Yeah, but I mean, there's value in talking about NWA too. Like, and a lot of educators, I think, shy away from that because like there's bad words, there's racialized language, there's difficult concepts like police brutality and stuff. But like, those things are happening. These things are commonplace. Yeah. So we either talk about them or we pretend that they don't exist. And that just creates division. So
yeah.
It is tough. I mean, yeah, and it's hard, especially as you get into like the younger grades to do that. But as you get into the older ones, like this stuff is already there. They're already engaging with this stuff. Why not use that? Like leverage that to have important conversations about things.
A lot?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like, you know, I learned a lot of shit from being a rap fan. Like, really important life lessons that for some reason, like, my parents couldn't get through to me. So, yeah. Like, you know, whatever, you guys don't understand. But, like, if KRS-One said it or, like, whatever, like...
Chuck D or,
I'd be like, okay. Like, one of my big examples is... I think I talked about this last week. Like, you know, my parents were always like, you know, you shouldn't smoke weed. It's bad for you, right? And I'm like, I do whatever I want.
But Snoop Dogg said otherwise.
Well, no. But like, and I would never listen. But when Sox and I, Ghetto Sox, became friends, you know, I was like, so like, you know, you want some? And he'd be like, no, like I don't smoke. It makes me lazy and shit. And I didn't quit smoking weed, but it made me think about it. And think about maybe I should, right? Because it was somebody that like was in the realm that I'm in and somebody that is doing things that I want to do. So like, I don't know, their opinion had more weight.
More weight, sure. You know, definitely.
Not to say mom and dad aren't right, but it's just...
Sorry, mom and dad.
She's not as cool.
Mom and dad just weren't as cool as Ghetto Socks. That's just like, that's how it is.
Are you out for treats? No. Mm. I'm out for treats.
Yeah, but I mean, that was always the case. And I think it is today, too. Like, especially for me, like a white kid growing up in the suburbs... What hip-hop taught me was that there was a lot more going on than what I was being told at school. So it was really easy to listen to Ice Cube records and be like, I've never heard about the Nation of Islam in my history class, but, you know, that's interesting. And they would have, you know, resources and mention names and things you could go look up. So you could go and find stuff out. And, yeah, listening to hip-hop really kind of opened those doors and was like, wow, there's a lot of stuff that they're just consciously not telling us. There's a lot of information that is being actively suppressed, and there's a lot of like mistreatment of people that is being swept under the rug. And here, this hip hop stuff is telling me all about it, and I'm you know, it's opening the door to learning about that. Mainstream schooling is pretending it doesn't exist. So, you know, it was a great privilege to listen to hip hop because it was like, I'm getting all this extra stuff that most of these kids in my class aren't getting.
They don't know.
They don't know. They have no idea.
Yeah.
And then, you know, well, here I am X number of years later, like, you know, beating the drum and trying to do exactly that. But yeah, it was kind of weird. It was a neat thing to do because all the kids I grew up with who were into like Guns N' Roses, they weren't getting any of that.
No.
They just, you know, just none of it.
They're so, just, yeah.
Living their lives as if, you know, there was nothing else going on. I thought that was a shame.
You were outcasted for being a rap fan.
I mean, a little bit. I mean, it was a different time because, yeah, rap wasn't as cool as it is now. It wasn't like everybody listens to rap. Back then, there was a lot of like metalheads, a lot of people still into like, the hair bands.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, back then to be like a white kid who was into rap, you know, you get a lot of the like, oh, you're a race traitor. Like, what does that even mean?
Jesus.
But like, people would want to like fight you because like, oh, you listen to rap, like, don't you know you're white kind of stuff. And again, I'm listening to all this stuff and I'm like, you know, waking up to...
Did you get that from both sides? Like, we're like, you know...
Not so much, because, like...
and stuff, were they, like, you know, stay in your lane?
Not really, because, like, if you were into it and, like, trying to do it, then you were just kind of part of this thing. And, you know, I... Being the white kid, you know, I'm very quick to call out, like, you know, the racism of other white kids at my junior highs. It's like, I've listened to Boogie Down Productions, and this is why you're wrong. And, you know, being kind of a dick about it, but at the same time, you know, there was like that sense that like, I've got access to something you don't have. Like, I have this knowledge you don't have because you're listening to the wrong stuff. And, you know, I don't know what you get from Poison's Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Nice song, but like,
oh my God,
you know, it's not gonna, awaken anything in you, I don't think.
When I was a bouncer at the Ale House, that was always the last song. That was always the last song until you knew the night was over. Oof. You're getting into fucking scrap at the end of the night to every Rose Thorn. That's how you know you had a good one.
Like a movie montage.
Yeah, just it's kind of like the Sublime song, KRS-One. It's like everything I know because of KRS-One. And it's like, you know, rap, especially like in those early eras, there was a lot of jewels to help you live a better life. There was also a lot of like, you know, craziness, Schoolie D, Saturday Night, kind of. Like, even in that, in the mix, there was like some real gems about like how to live and how not to live your life. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why I like guys like Ice-T, because like it was, on the one hand, it was gangsterish and it gave you all of that. But at the same time, like, he was super political. He was, you know, calling out the administration. He was talking about, you know, the state of the neighborhood and you know, welfare systems and how these things work and how they work against people that they're trying to help. And so you get this, like, sprinkling of really woke shit in with, you know, all the other stuff.
Absolutely.
And it took me a while to realize that, like, yeah, there's a lot of, like, Ice Cube is another really good example. The stuff that you didn't realize was political until you really start paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, there's a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah, I'm a big Ice Cube fan.
He didn't initially try to be political. He was just like speaking
his Ice-T. Yeah,
it was just part of the whole conversation.
Yeah. Ice-T or Ice Cube?
Both.
I feel like Ice-T always knew he was kind of like political in a way.
Yeah, well, and he got it forced on him too, because like the whole cop killer thing, which was
body
weird.
Count?
Yeah, because that's just it. It was a body count thing. This was his like hardcore punk band.
Yeah.
But he was Ice-T, so they're like, black rapper hates cops. It's like,
probably.
That's a weird way of framing this. Given
surprised?
Yeah, but it was like he had to jump through a lot of hurdles because he was affiliated with rap, because he was a black man, that he probably shouldn't have, given what it was that was actually the source of the thing. Like, but yeah, Ice-T was great.
Ice-T's a fucking G.
I got to see him last year, last summer before the Rona came through. And he was like, I'm the oldest living man still performing rap. And it was great.
No, it's true though. Like, Ice-T was a gangster.
Like, well, I think he was like 63.
Bad.
And he called out the crowd. He was like, some of you only know me from SUV or whatever. SVU. Yeah, and he's like, you think I'm police, but like, I'm Ice-T the OG. And like, and then he put on the best show I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Ice-T would put on a great. He's just got energy.
Yeah.
Like, he's got an energy around him. He's one of those people that just kind of glows.
He did do one thing that pissed me off, though. It was amazing and sad. He was bringing out all these guests. This was like this big crazy show with all these guests. Like, Joyner Lucas was there, and he was bringing out all these people, and he's like, I got my man with me. He's like, how many of you know Dr. Octagon? And I'm like, oh shit, is it Cool Keith? He's like, how many of you know Black Elvis? I'm like, oh fuck, it's Cool Keith. He's got Cool Keith. Like, Cool Keith. How many of you know Ultramagnetic? And I'm like, it's Cool Keith. And then he's like, it's that guy's cousin. Come on out. And I'm like, oh man. I'm just getting amped up. And then it's like, oh. All right, you're cool too, I guess. You know.
You want a Tony the Tiger? You got Terry the Tiger.
Yeah.
Like the cousin.
Show love to your cousins.
It's a great, great trick for shows, though. Like, getting people warmed up. Like, who? We got a special guest. You know, who likes, you know, gin and juice? Who likes Drop It While It's Hot? Here's a guy who also likes those songs. Come on out.
One of the best shows I ever saw. Man, I saw a couple good shows. Killer Mike. Played in Halifax a while ago. That was dope.
Oh, at the Olympic Hall?
Yeah, that it was great. Supposed to be Action Bronson, but Bronson got ill. Yeah. Shout out to Action Bronson. He's looking good.
He's doing great. He's like, watching him doing those, like, jump up on a table without, you know, like, using his arms and stuff.
That's what happens when restaurants close.
Restaurants close. Action Bronson got fit.
Well, shit, might as well CrossFit, yeah.
You know, another, I saw Chaos at the Canard Center.
Yeah.
And it was a free show.
Nice.
Yeah, and it was actually wicked. It was the only concert I think I ever went to alone.
Sweet.
But it was dope. That was a good one. There's been some good shows here, man. All right, the Rugged Man. Did you see him when he came here?
I've seen him a couple of times, yeah. There's a great photo of me, like, fighting with him in front of the stage. We're, like, tussling with each other. I know it was some kind of a mosh pit scenario, I think. Yeah. But, yeah. It was great.
Yeah, it was a fun. I saw him. It was a fun show. He commands so much, like, it just owns the whole building.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it was great, opposite. Like, the Reflections was, like, half empty somehow. And, like,
those Reflection just, like, shows. I saw LP at Reflections.
Oh, that
and it was just, one. Like, yeah. Well, and at one point, he was just standing there watching, like, the opening acts. I was like, you're LP? Okay. What's up? You know, like, cool. This is all right. That's kind of neat.
Saw Ghostface at the Marquee.
Oh, man. Some great shows. Best Marquee show I ever saw was Kanon at the Jazz. Or, no,
really?
At the Pop Festival.
Kanon? Kind of underrated, like he was.
This was right after Dusty Foot Philosopher came out, so like he wasn't really known yet. He wasn't waving flag Kanon yet, but he had a DJ, and then the only drums were he had a djembe player, and like they mic'd the djembe right. So if he hit it, it just the whole place just shook, and it was bananas. Mm. That was great. That and Edon and Daga at the Attic, I think it was my favorite Halifax hip hop show because they had a b-boy competition at the beginning. Alpha Flight played, which was like Sox's old crew.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Edon and Daga, and he's like doing the like rhyming and cutting at the same time and like throwing the mic back and forth and like each saying one word of the rhyme. And like,
oh, it was just, wild.
It was the most hip hop shit I've ever seen. I'm like, this was crazy.
Rap lost a lot of its showmanship. Like, I don't know. Like, I find watching a lot of people perform is boring as fuck. Like, I don't know.
You gotta bring something else to the table.
Yeah, you gotta be entertaining, right? Like, it's a performance art.
Yeah. I think we gotta leave the white towels backstage. There's a lot of, like, coordinated, like, I've got this towel, so I'm gonna, like, this is my prop.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's cool, but after the third set, it's like, yeah, okay, you know, want something else.
I always go buck wild on stage. I just don't know what else to do.
Buck 65 is one of the guys around here who really did it different. Like, he'd pull out a pocket of glitter, you know, like,
yeah.
Even if it was really low rent, he made it like really exciting and interesting and different. And it made all the difference. Yeah. I saw a Sebutones show where the stage was set up like somebody's living room. And the Buck 65 and 6'2, they're sitting there playing cards. And they had mics in front of them. They're playing cards. And every couple of minutes, somebody would get up and go back to where the like desk was, change the record, scratch for a minute, and then come back and deal a new hand. And they'd rhyme while playing cards. So it's just like watching two guys in their living room hanging out who happened to be also putting on a rap show.
That's really interesting.
It was wild. And I remember this like 25 years later because it was just so different.
Out.
Yeah. Mm. It was a bit of showmanship.
It's almost like how a podcast would be put on now or something. It's like having that conversational piece part of the show.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And it's just, yeah, I mean, anything you could do to make it interesting. I used to throw like Saturday morning cartoon themes into my sets. Just because it's like, now we're all going to sing the theme from the Gummy Bears together.
Yeah.
And everybody knows it. Or it's like the theme from Family Matters or something. Yeah. And for 2 minutes, everybody's singing that song. And then the DJ drops a beat and you go right back to it. But like, just those little bits of something to disrupt it and make it interesting and like make something memorable happen.
Yeah, I like antagonizing the audience. I don't know why.
Yeah, that was always my kind of thing too.
I'm like, listen up, you punk bitches.
Well, that's why like Pat Stay's battles and the hopscotch battles like 3 years in a row, somebody hucked a fish on stage. And I'm like, that doesn't happen anywhere. Of course it happened here in Halifax. But like it also made it memorable because that fish then got thrown into the crowd and then the crowd threw it back and suddenly there's like it's the battle with the fish. And it's like you can't forget that because you got smoked in the face with a mackerel while you're doing stuff.
That would piss me the fuck off. I'm sorry. That's where I'd get off stage and I'd be like, who threw the mackerel? who threw the motherfucking mackerel?
Oh, it's good though. You know? It's good though. Flying fish. It ain't a Scotian battle unless you get smoked with a fish.
Oh my God.
Skrunked with the mackerel.
The whole crowd smells like fish at Scotian battles.
So, kind of going back on the topic of like linking kind of like mainstream society with hip hop, like what do you think about breakdancing making the Olympics?
I'm very curious about that. Like, I'm really interested to see what's going to happen because, on the one hand, like you can't do it as an Olympic event the way it's always been done.
Yeah.
With like a bunch of people standing around and a DJ throwing stuff, and it's. I can't imagine they do it like that. They'd have to do it more like figure skating or floor gymnastics. So, like, is there going to be more than one person out there? Do you just come out and is it one-on-one? Are you battling against somebody or is it just like a three-minute showcase? Will there be a DJ?
Yeah.
Like, there's so many questions I have about how it's going to roll out. And then, you know, it also has the potential to advance the form, because like if it's Olympic and now there's these rules for how you do it, that'll cause people to progress in different kinds of ways.
The but funding for people to train for it too.
Yeah.
In terms of like
which countries do you think would run that? I'm like, I don't know why. I feel like Japan taking the first goal. Yeah.
Japan's definitely got some sick people, but like, I mean, well, I think Russia's banned from the next round of Olympics or something.
Russia get banned from the Olympics?
They've got some sick ass breakers, but I think they're banned from the next Olympics.
Wow. Just like pumping breakdance with the roids and shit and seeing what
that's
happens.
Funny.
Well, that too, like
breakdancing bears.
Well, you see some of these people on like the pommel horse or the uneven bars, they're just whipping around. I'm like, that could translate. So yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens. But also, like, yeah, if breakdancing is in, doesn't that mean we have to have a DJ as well? So can there be an official, is there just one Olympic DJ or does each country bring their own DJ who's part of the team?
That would be so cool.
Well,
I feel like they'd probably just have one DJ. But then that one person would have to know everybody's like routines.
Yeah, exactly. So so that's my thing, is I'm very curious to see like how this is gonna shape.
What if they just don't use DJs?
Well, they could do that too. It could be like figure skating where somebody's just like pressing play on a CD player out of sight, and you just go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens because it's like, this is going to be really interesting. It can't be what it is. So how are they going to change it? How are they going to make it work in that context? And I'm excited. I think it'll be really interesting.
Yeah, no doubt.
And
I'd like to see that too. Just generally more hip hop in everything.
Yeah, well, it's like floor gymnastics. I mean, that's the only thing I can really think that it compares to at this point. With the ribbon or the ball or whatever. But, we'll have to see what happens there.
Do you ever try and get into breakdancing?
Oh, when I was a kid, I was dope.
Me too. You were dope?
I could do the worm, like, on the ground and everything. I'm not in the shape to do it.
I've always been in kind of the same shape, so when I was a kid, I would try. But I would just end up spinning on my back and just kind of getting stuck there.
The turtle.
I was like, no, this doesn't work. I don't have the technical know-how to be a producer. So I'm just going to write words that rhyme for long enough that I'm eventually good at it. And here we are.
No, I couldn't be a dancer. They take really good care of themselves. Like they're
not any of our strongest.
No, they're like my body is my temple, and like nothing goes in that doesn't service, you know, what they're doing. I'm way too big of a scumbag for that.
Oh, like, yeah. I had an energy drink for breakfast.
Yeah.
It was delicious.
My lifestyle is not conducive to successful b-boying.
No, if I exercise at all.
If you want to break dance, folks.
Get you that dragon energy.
If I exercise at all, I will die. Like, I'm pretty sure. Hermit, thank you so much for coming out, man.
Thanks for having
really, me. Really appreciate it. It was a good chat.
Yeah.
To be honest, I just smoked a doobie before we got on here, so I don't remember much of it, but I'm pretty sure it's probably pretty fresh. I know you, like, your wealth of knowledge, you can talk forever. It's always a pleasure getting together, man. I really appreciate you coming out.
I'm glad you guys are doing this. This is dope.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's more to come.